Hey guys, Nita Cherise here. Just a little note about this week's episode. Recording conditions were less than ideal. There were several folks who decided to do some yard work, as well as a host of garbage trucks that needed to complete their business all at the same time. As a result, you will hear some background noise at different points. We do apologize for this, but we ask that you ignore it, please, and enjoy the show. Thanks so much for listening.
I'm sorry. Again, I don't know. Like, there's garbage trucks that come.
You say exactly?
I'm so sorry.
It's like there's a musical going on. Nikki's doing a podcast. Nikki's doing a podcast. What was that? She's doing a podcast. Let's get out the boxes. Let's all walk our dogs.
I'm tuning it out, but now I'm like, because you keep on saying, hey, what is that? Who is that? You know, so now I'm hearing it.
I hear everything. I'm just like, doesn't make any sense to say anything because you can't be like, because you gotta stop. I'm Nikki Ebor of Rap in Atlanta. Welcome to Rap in Atlanta. I'm Nita Cherise.
And I'm Nikki.
We realize that many of you have not watched season one, so we are doing a rewatch. This is episode number 3, entitled Go for Broke. Even though funds are limited, Earn takes Van on a date. Al and Darius have a tense meeting in the woods.
There were some things that I just played out did not notice during the first watching of this. I think on this show, they managed to touch upon, ever so briefly, sex trafficking.
Wait, where? They managed to do what?
When we come to that scene, I'll point it out.
Okay.
I think you might find it disappointing. Yeah, this episode really did much to shed light on Earn's thinking early on. And you could see that, again, when he's not smoking, he is a logical, reasonable person. And he actually does have some, or at least in these earlier episodes, he has some swag when he wants to. He has the ability to be forceful.
Yes.
That was refreshing to see, you know, after having watched all of, you know, season two, that there were just things that I noticed in this episode that I had not noticed previously. So now I'm anxious to get on those points specifically.
Okay. Well, it starts off, he is trying to buy, what restaurant is that? Because I remember you telling me that was a real restaurant. I didn't think it was.
Yeah, that's Zesto's. And so I have a little background information on that, if you'd like to hear about it.
Yes.
So it's a restaurant known for ice cream, burgers, chili dogs, and more. It was originally a national franchise that was a subsidiary of the Taylor Freeze Corporation. And it was meant to compete with Dairy Queen.
I was just going to say it looked like a Dairy Queen.
Yeah, so it was meant to compete with Dairy Queen, and initially it only sold ice cream. So the Zesto in Atlanta, and there's several locations, that's been around since 1949. It was owned by this guy named John Livaditis or Livaditis. The parent company, Taylor Freezer Corp, they did Zesto's wrong, because at a certain point they were just like, we don't like retail locations anymore. We're just not going to support them. So during the 1950s, they were just either shutting down franchise locations or not giving any support to their franchisees. And they pretty much just let them hang out to dry. The Atlanta franchisee, he was like, oh, well, forget this. I'm not just selling ice cream. I'm trying to keep this business open. So I'm going to add hamburgers and other stuff to the menu. And then he even started like selling Christmas trees during the winter month.
That's random.
Yeah. So he was just like, no, fuck this. I'm staying open. Like, I don't care what any of you mofos do in the other states, but I'm staying open. So by 1955, he opened up 4 other locations. There are other stories, interesting stories about this restaurant that I won't get into, but there are other Zestos throughout the country. They're in Nebraska, Washington, Indiana, Alabama, South Dakota, and Tennessee, but they all have different owners and different menus.
Ah, okay. So it's regional then.
Zesto Atlanta Atlanta only exists in Atlanta.
Okay. Okay. Well, that scene, I remember when I first watched it, I remember thinking, I don't think that I've ever seen anything like this on television before, where someone is struggling quite in this way. Like when you talk about the working poor, like if you just looked at Earn, you know, he has a uniform on, you know that he has a job. You wouldn't assume that right now he only has like $2 and change or however much it was. But if you're trying to buy a kid's meal, it's probably because you're counting out your pennies or you literally only have a couple of dollars. And that is very, very common. But I never seen it portrayed in such a way. You know, he wasn't on the street with a sign. You know, he's not on drugs. He's just a regular person who does work and does get a direct deposit, as we see later on. But it's not enough. And so this girl, she did really, really well in her role. Like, I was happy for her because she was so professional. You know, she wasn't a stereotype of the fast food worker, but she was also like taking everything way too seriously. And I just like their back and forth, that exchange where she says that she doesn't see any kids and then that you have to be a kid to order. And of course, Earn's point is, okay, so, you know, that's just not true. I know that that's not true. Like, I fell for him. It was humiliating. You know, she kept telling him to speak up and he was embarrassed, but I felt for him because I've been there. And I wanted to smack that girl. But then at the same time, I was like, I like how professional she is. And, you know, she's like, I have just been made day manager, you know, and it's just, it's such a contrast. She's working at this restaurant, but she's doing better than Earn is, you know, and she has some sort of purpose. You know, like, whatever her life goals are at this moment, she wanted to be manager. She's day manager and nobody's not going to come in there and mess up her rules. She was a little drunk with power. So then, of course, and also she had a positive interaction. Like, if we're continuing with the theme that you brought up about, just like how Black folks sometimes in this show are the reasons for the negative things happening to them. You talked about the woman at the jail last week and how she talked to Al in a way that she didn't have to. And what I liked about her, she was enforcing the rules. But when he asked for a cup, she was like, oh, sure, here. Like, she was just professional and positive. She just wasn't going to give him his way.
Yeah, it's hard to get a job in Atlanta, especially if you're from out of town or you don't have the right network. The Divine Nine rule out here. And you want to get a job, it's best to know one or many of them. You know, if you don't have that type of network going for you, you need to either belong to the Masons, you know, or something. Be an alumni from one university or another, you need to have some sort of in. And once you get in, I mean, people do not just walk off their jobs here, and they don't really run the risk of doing anything to lose their jobs either. It's funny because you will get the shittiest customer service here that you could ever possibly endure. I can tell you some stories about like the shittiest customer service I've received in Atlanta, but on the other side of the spectrum are those people who are like, you are not going to get me fired. And she was one of them. She was one of them. But yeah, like, I think this very subtly pointed out that aspect of Atlanta, but also that aspect of the working poor, the homeless where you don't know they're homeless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's very, very real. You know, I mean, TV, usually what we see on TV, it's always an extreme thing where being very, very poor or very, very rich is the gimmick of the show. And but this show gets it just right. I mean, like, even after college, there have been times where it's like, all right, I get paid tomorrow, but I'm hungry now. So, you know, what change do I have? I mean, it's like that. Like, you know, I couldn't say, oh, I was below the poverty line. But there have been instances where, you know, you need to just buy a kid's meal. You know, it happens. And it's amazing to me how many folks don't know that that is a reality for a lot of people, that it's not just, you know, people who have to live outside.
While I was at the ATM, mm-hmm. the girls next to me, they were looking at the tickets that people had gotten after they do their transaction and just kind of discarded them there. And one person, they had like 5 cents left in their bank account. And she was just like, shit, I've been there before.
Yeah.
Then the next scene. So Earn, God, hopefully he got something to eat more than that soda. He's sitting there. Earn really did not know that Alfred sold drugs.
Right.
He had such an incredulous expression on his face, like, seriously? That's what you do? Like, what did you think he did?
That's crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that just shows you how disconnected he's been from his family, you know, and from his cousin. And the way I said it was funny. I forget the line that came right before it, but he said, you might as well sell drugs. And he was like, what do you do to afford such and such sell drugs? I mean, it was just like, it was really funny. And the way he turned around and looked at him, it's just, he's naive when it comes to his cousin, you know, into certain things. It was the same look he had on his face when he was like, you know, oh, it wasn't that much weed. It's not that bad, right? You know, and Al just like looks at him. It's like, we live in two different worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very evident. Of course, Darius standing there ironing money. And then he chimes in, selling drugs is easy. People are addicted to them.
That fool.
It's so simple.
Captain Obvious.
But then, you know, I thought it was very slick how Alfred starts talking about, like, okay, what pays for studio time and this and that and the other and clothes and all of that. And that reminded me of when Method Man first started out. That fool went on MTV Raps. He had his backpack on his back. He did the interview. And then during the episode, you could see him, like, kind of circulating throughout the crowd. Why? Because he was selling drugs.
Wait, really? Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. He was on the cusp of getting where he needed to go, but he hadn't started making that real money yet, you know?
Right.
And if your only talent is music or rapping, street poetry or whatever, like, how else are you going to make money? The money that you need to actually fund your dream if you don't have any other skills.
Exactly. Yeah.
God. What happened after this scene?
After that scene, they go back to Van's place. Ern is on the couch. He's on the computer. And Van comes in, and I have been in this mood before. Like, she was just annoyed. He wasn't really doing anything wrong, but she was annoyed. And the thing is, like, I felt for him because he was happy to see her. And she makes a comment like, don't get up. I don't want you to get distracted by going and picking up Lottie or whatever. And you could tell it's like, it's one of those things where one could argue that she is not really being clear with what she wants, but then on the same token, you don't understand why you have to spell out for him, maybe sometimes you could pick up the kid. I get her annoyance, but I did feel bad for him because you could tell he did not understand what was going on because he was in like a pretty nice mood. And so as she goes and she puts Lottie down and she's changing her clothes and she's just in a mood. And she I think this is the scene where they get into the conversation about, like, I don't think she takes it. Well, not I don't think. She doesn't take it seriously what he's doing with Al. She doesn't consider it to be work. So once they're in the bed, you know, that's when he decides to take her out to dinner. You know, and she's mad, but he wins her over by joking. But that scene was just like, I have been in that mood where, you know, that you're kind of being like, what is the word? Like, you kind of get why they don't get it, but then at the same time, you're upset that they don't get it. Like, why do I have to tell you to come and pick up Lottie? Because she was like, and it's ridiculous that I have to sometimes drop her off at your parents. It's like, it's just not first and foremost on his mind. Not that he doesn't care, because I really do believe that he's trying to do what he's doing because he doesn't want to fail. He said that. He said that in the first episode. He wants to succeed and he wants to take care of his daughter, but she's still not on his mind in the same way that is on Van's mind. And as usual in a relationship, there's someone who has to be the realist. Like, she's not against dreams, but I think it would help if he was trying to chase his dreams. It would help if he were bringing in more money. She'd probably be more understanding to his dream. So he had already lost, like, when she walked in the door, because she was irritated. So
I think this episode did a good job of pointing out gender roles and gender disparities.
Yeah.
Like, because the underlying conversation that Van and Ern seem to have been having, you know, over the course of the last, what, two episodes now into season one?
Mm-hmm.
The ability to actually follow your dreams if you're Black in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I'm looking at it if you're Black in Atlanta context, but I think that continues to unfold, you know, on throughout the first season and the second season. But it starts, mm-hmm. you know, between Van and Ern, and he's saying, well, you know, and he says it at dinner, but he said it before, like, you know, you should want to support me in following my dream, you know. And she's just like, we have a child and I'm tired. I cannot risk following my dream of opening up a boutique and then, you know, risk succeeding and or failing because I have another person who's dependent on me. Like, I understand that you see this going after your dream die hard as a means to provide. But pragmatically speaking, yep. Dream part-time, because the daughter is still a full-time thing. And she doesn't have the luxury of doing that the way that he does. Like, even though I know that he feels pressure to provide for both Lottie and Van, I think he wants to provide for both of them, you know,
yeah.
He still has a certain degree of autonomy that a woman would not. And I think that's what Van is pointing out, especially when she, you know, she says the thing that she says at dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see exactly where Van is coming from. But conversely, like, how much do you think this fool is bringing in working at the airport and doing odd jobs for his cousin? Like, because the way that she responded to him during dinner, like, she was so oblivious. I'm like, he's living with you. He's homeless.
Yeah.
You had to bail him out of jail just recently. Even when she came in and she made that comment, oh, you think you're the only boy I bailed out of jail? Yes, he is. If you raising your child, you ain't bailing niggas out of jail left and right.
Right.
So I don't even know why you said that.
She's just, that whole thing, the way she acted at dinner, she acted like a wife. She acted like a wealthy wife who's oblivious to the fact that, like, the husband just lost all of their money.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, why are you just, you know, market, really? Like, you got it like that now? And I kind of took that, like, she knew that he was going to be paying for it, but I think that she was his purpose. She was doing it on purpose, just like, he's going to figure it out. And then I also think she had in her mind, she doesn't know what he's been doing, but he said he was bringing her to dinner, and God damn it, she's going to enjoy herself, which is a little, I mean, it's not right, but, you know, he did ask her. He didn't say, like, you know, hey, I want to take you out, but can we do something kind of low key because of X, Y, and Z? No, because he was kind of in the doghouse and he wanted to be happy. And you can tell that he loves her. When she walks in, he's happy to see her. He just has no idea how annoyed she is. And so he said that. I believe he really wanted to take her out, but he was also just trying to make her happy. You know, he didn't want her to go to bed angry. And he probably, you know, he wanted to be together that night and just have like a nice evening, and saw that that wasn't happening. So, and then on her end, she knows that he doesn't make a lot and couldn't take care of getting himself out of jail. But he said he was taking her out to dinner, and she's about to have dinner. But so I think she was just like, whatever, you know, because I was kind of like, oh, Van, don't do that.
Well, it's a push-pull for us as viewers, because I think it's easy to see both sides of the coin.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it just reminded me of why I used to root for him.
In the next scene, he's on the phone with boy Justin. And two things. He's got a smartphone. So you mean to tell me he couldn't just quickly Google on his phone cheap restaurants or happy hours going on around town tonight? Because Atlanta's really good for that.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I think Earn's like one of those people who's so smart, he's dumb.
An idiot savant. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there's no common sense. Like, why are you just asking around? And then Justin, that's not the face of reliability. Not that he was lying, but he could have been talking about people he took there like over a year ago. Like, things change.
And as we see, it did change. But I'm just like, look, you know what? How much money you're dealing with. If you have a budget in your head, what you want to spend and still survive, you know, for the next 2 weeks until your next payday, go ahead and do your research and do your due diligence. In fact, Earn, do that with everything.
Right?
Like, how is this so hard? But anyhow, back Justin, and this is the part that I think is going to upset you. I think that girl that he was like, girl, you are something else. I think that was one of his hoes. And he says during the conversation, oh, yeah, you should go to this place. I take a couple of my hoes there. And that's why he chastised her, because I believe she was one of his hoes and he was just having her drive him around.
Aww.
I knew you were going to be disappointed.
Oh, man. But that makes sense, because I remember when I first saw it, I was like, what do you mean when she listened to your conversation? She's right there. I just saw
He was just a dog. That does make sense. And then he said, one of my hoes, I mean, it's kind of sad, but like people say that so often. You know, like, who takes that literally anymore? Like, oh, so you have sex for money?
No, you can't play around with that phase. Let me tell you. So in the year 2007, the sex trade generated $290 million in Atlanta. And we're talking about sex trafficking of young people, including children. Atlanta sex trafficking. I think I said in an episode when we were reviewing season two, I was like, when are they going to touch upon sex trafficking? And I totally did not get this during the first viewing, but it's the only thing that makes sense as far as why he would treat that girl like that. And he was not joking. It wasn't that, girl, you were something else. Ha, ha, ha. No.
But that messes it up. Because I just thought, like, man, this dude is so stupid. Because he's the same one that was like, man, your cousin thick. Is that weird for you? Like, and gave him that weird look, staring at him, like he hoped that it was weird for him because that's what he wanted.
Yeah, well.
I just took him just like a, man, this dude is stupid.
Yeah, I think we just had a version of our own Me Too movement. We just realized that.
Oh, God.
Justin is a horrible person. So
he is.
Yeah. And that girl was young. I mean, you saw how young she was.
She didn't look that young to me.
She looked young to me. She looked very...
I mean, she didn't look old, but, no. You know, she did... I'm going to have to look at her again. I've watched this episode 10 times. I don't know if I focus in on her as much. Like, I literally wait for that scene because it's my favorite.
I feel like...
Not anymore.
If she was a woman that was, like, our age or maybe a few years younger, there's no way she would have been, like... Oh, I'm just going to sit here quietly and drive his car with this fool chastising right. me for listening, for having ears while he's on the phone talking about his hoes. So that's the only thing that makes sense. I'm sorry.
Well, why does he need to work at... Well, I mean, I guess he doesn't really try at his job at the airport.
He's got to have a cover, too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many guys who, if they are pimping out some girls on the side, they usually don't carry a business card. But then, I don't, like, run with a lot of pimps anymore, so...
I was going to say, oh.
No, I'm just kidding, Robin Atlanta audience. I've never ran with pimps. Or players. Or hustlers.
Our rapping Atlanta audience is now going back like, she drops in a lot of things. She was arrested.
I've had a life of varied experiences.
Yes, you have. And then the way you were like, oh, I mean, I always knew I would get arrested at some point.
I was born and raised in Northern California. It is the cradle of protesters. We were issued picket signs at birth.
Oh, yeah. It really is. And I was born in the extreme antithesis of that.
Anyhow, then we go to Darius and Alfred's. They're cleaning their guns. Like, I love the way they're preparing for this drug meet.
Yes. It's so nice. And that conversation is hilarious. And this is, I've always loved Al, but this is where I yelled out Al for president 2020. When he said, if a girl is calling me daddy, something is wrong. I've always felt that way. I've just never been able to say that with a straight face. Every time I say it, I just feel like I might have a repressed memory somewhere. It's like I already have one. I don't like guys that have wanted me to call them that or who get off on that. Somebody had a song years ago. I think it was Twister. And it just starts off with this girl who sounds like she's 10 years old. It's very disturbing. Asking, will he be her daddy? And I hate that song. I hate it. I'm still mad at that little girl.
Now I need to know what song that is.
She's like, will you be my daddy? My dad. It's disgusting. And it's just like, the more innocent and young and the sweeter the voice is, that's what people like. And that is disgusting. But when he said that, I was like, thank you, Al. It's so nice to see a man say that, like that he doesn't want to be called daddy. Of course, he said that Poppy was different because it was cultural, which is stupid. but still. And then, but Darius wouldn't let it go because like time passes and then he's like, what do you call yours? And he's like, gun. I call it gun. Brian Henry is, he is a treasure.
Yeah, he is a national treasure. Yeah, Darius, okay, I guess we'll cover it when we go over the Dariusism. But yeah, he had so many, like, cool little one-liners here. When he suggested handcuffing the briefcase to himself, I remember after the first time watching this episode, like, that's not a good idea. Like, y'all are stoners. You smoke all the time. Al didn't want to eat in a restaurant last episode because he couldn't smoke. So the likelihood that you're going to remember where the key is to this briefcase is very slim.
Yes, that was so stupid, but I did understand why he was trying to level up. He's like, I'm not a duffel bag boy. It's like, okay, noted. But you're not focused enough to keep up with the key. But I love how he just assumed that, like, later that Al got the key off of the kitchen table. Like, why would he? It was your idea.
I guess because Al, he agreed very quickly to the idea of the handcuffed briefcase. And when he was like, why? He's like, you know, level up. He's like, yep. Like, no thought went into this whatsoever.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed with Al, too. Like, I thought she was smart.
No.
I mean, Al is, like, the most perceptive characters. You know, he's observant. Well, maybe I'm answering my own question. Maybe that's why Darius thought he'd swipe the key for him. But Darius, as usual, is infuriating because he's just in his own orbit. And I love how he just thought that asking Al again, the key was going to magically appear. It's like, you just asked him. He hasn't left your sight. Why would he have the key now? He irritated me so much. But I love him, but he is a toddler.
When we get to that scene, I think he was frightened, like, in a very major way. And he had a good reason to be. But yeah, Darius is a special case. of that, I am sure. Now, oh my God, this fake-ass parking attendant. When he rolls up, he's like, oh, don't mind that. That's just...
He's just smelling hard.
Yeah.
The hard work on me, baby.
Yeah, he's smelling the hard day's work on me, that's all.
Oh my God. Oh God. I don't want to go into our elements, but this scene will come back.
Yeah, he did something else. I mean, the way he yelled, yo, we got. Hey, hey, yo, we got. Oh my God.
And his sliding scale of prices, because he said eight. No, at first he said 10, and she was like, valet is 10. And he's like, all right, 8. All right, 6. Well, we got. And he's like, oh, this vest. And then he was a fake parking attendant, but he wasn't even, like, he was being honest. He's like, oh, no, I found this. Did he say Costco or?
Like, he found this in the trash, and this is a lightsaber, like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, this is not helping you look valid.
I appreciated his honesty, because that means when he said, yo, if you park here with me, I'll come and tell you if they're towing your car. And he did.
Later on.
He was true to his word. There are signs posted in downtown Atlanta. It's like, there is no parking attendant on staff. Do not give your money to anyone who claims to be.
So that's real.
Yeah, that's very real.
But I like how he was like, look, you're fine until midnight. And he was like, that's when the street gangs come out, you know, vandalize the cars. It's like,
that's still the cars a joyride. Like clockwork.
I find it amazing that restaurant continues to let him in. Like, you can tell he goes in there all the time because nobody bats an eyelash. And he's like, hey, like letting his customers know. It's like, this dude really does have customers in this restaurant. Obviously, you know, they know who he is because it doesn't seem like they would let somebody that looked that crazy even, like, come in. That was hilarious.
Yeah, he gets customers and he is a regular, and that's probably why they're like, you know what, everybody's got their way of making money, and it's the city can be tough. The show immediately flashes to Alfred and Darius sitting in the car singing Cheryl Lynn's Encore, which,
yeah.
Why do Atlantans love the song so much? I don't get it. This and Frankie Beverly's Before I Let Go.
What is the matter with you? That is black. Like, I was sitting here like, oh, yeah, those two songs. I'm sure I have line dance with a plate in my hand to both of those songs.
Okay, I understand that when the song comes on, I'm supposed to get happy. Yes, I get it, but I don't get the foundation for why this is a natural occurrence, especially in Atlanta. I'm telling you, if you're in a predominantly black function, those two songs come on, everyone loses their mind. And it's not like... But that's not like one of Cheryl Lynn's best songs. Like, To Be Real was much more popular. Like, who's the other ones?
I But I don't know. It's something about that song. That's just the family reunion, barbecue, somebody's wedding. Like, oh, yeah, it's just black. I don't know. It's a happier time.
Yeah, to be real, that was her most famous song.
Yeah, but the other one is more like black. Not to be real, isn't, but that to me is more like more mainstream. Like, of course you like that song. Who doesn't like that song? But it almost skews over into like house music almost. That CC Peniston kind of like a forefather to that. And the other song is just black. Like, it's just like Maze. That's just black. And that's just what I think about. I don't know.
You put Frankie Beverly and Maze on nationwide among black people, that's going to be the reaction. I get that. But also, that is a depressing song. He's talking about breaking up. What I don't get is this Shaolin encore song. It's a B-side. It is not nearly one of her most popular songs. The only thing, and please, folks who live in Atlanta, who were born and raised in Atlanta, if you know why this is, please message me and tell me. I really want to know, because it's only in Atlanta where I've seen that degree of reaction to this song. I haven't seen people react.
Really?
Yes, I haven't seen people react as hardcore to Encore as I have in Atlanta.
I have.
Oh my God. Well, maybe it's just because
I don't
get it. Because that's not a song we used to play on the West Coast. Like, that was not.
Well, see, I mean, yeah, I think it's just Southern. Like, sometimes when I say black like that, not that black people don't exist anywhere else, I do realize, but I really just mean it's just Southern, because when I heard that, I was doing what Darius was doing. The little move was like, oh yeah, like, I was literally doing the same. Like, it's like, of course you're sitting in the car listening to it. Just reminds me of like old Chaka Khan, and it I know for me it's nostalgia too. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it is a regional thing, because I didn't think that was strange at all. Again, I was chair dancing, and I've seen episode 85 times.
Yeah, I don't get that song in particular. I know all the words to it now, because I've been in Atlanta long enough where it's like, look, you don't know all the words to Encore, you're tripping, because this is the jam. This is the official Atlanta jam, and you're tripping. So anyway, yeah. Please let Nikki know, because I
think it must be just a Southern thing. There are some things I don't realize are just a Southern thing, because I'm always in the South. But now that you say that, I bet you it's just one of those things. I bet if you talk to like somebody from Mississippi, they're like, Sherilyn's Encore? Yes.
I have a good friend from Mississippi. I will ask her. Yeah, because I do not. I'm like, okay, is this a song that you roller skated to? Thinking maybe the Sherilyn Encore song is like an Atlanta roller rink song, because it's a good song to skate to. But
it is. Yeah.
Okay. Now that we've broken that down,
stick it to all the important topics.
I'm sorry. That was fun. They're singing Sherilyn's Encore, and then the guy comes and tells him to follow him to the drug meet. I really like that Migos song that was playing. That was hot.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, like, I didn't realize, like, okay, I know that I'm late, because, I mean, this was 2 years ago, and I had heard of them, but it's like, okay, that's what kids are listening to. I like a lot of their songs, like, when I'm not paying attention to the lyrics. And then when I hear the lyrics, I'm like, no, I have to turn this off. It's like, no, this just can't play in my house. But I like their songs. I just didn't, you know, I mean, if my students are, like, kids that I have to see every day that get on my nerves, listen to it, like, that's not a way to get me to appreciate it. But since watching Atlanta, I'm like, oh, I do like that song. I didn't know they said that, though.
Yeah. It's not for the faint of heart.
No. And I'm very faint at times. I'm like, no, I'm too young to hear this.
So they pull up to the drug meet. They're out in the middle of nowhere. It's dark. There are no street lights. It's woods. Like, no one will hear you scream out there.
I'm sure that's why they chose that area.
Exactly. And they were fully prepared with their RV, just very comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been party to a drug deal, and I'm glad to say that that's an experience I will never know. But they're there for, what, 45 seconds when a naked man is pulled out of the
out of like the little storage part.
Yes. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
I thought it was funny. how cool Al and Darius were. I mean, you have to be cool in that kind of situation, but they sat there like, yeah, this is normal, you know? And then of course it just heightens the tension for, okay, these guys, you know, they do what they say that they're going to do. And it was so cool with it. Like, I just liked how, I think, was it Quavo? He was like, hey man, put your clothes on because it's cold out here. Like, it's going to be all right. He was like all comforting and gentle, knowing that he was going to kill him, you know, and that just kind of heightened the tension for Darius, who, in fact, does not have the key for the briefcase. You know, they've never dealt with these guys before. So it just kind of made the stakes higher. And the guy made a comment. He was like, you know, my son, which is like, OK, so does this guy have a son who's Quavo's age? You know, is he older? Like, I wanted to know, like, what was happening. Like, it was almost like, does this have anything to even do with drugs? it's like it was, I was just wondering. Or did his son do something and he's paying for it?
They knew him and they were quite confident that what his end was going to be. And that's why they were just like, yeah, go ahead and be warm. You know, like, this is a foregone conclusion. You are going to die tonight. And what shocked me was just like, well, I guess there was nothing else they could do. Like, they can't sit there and scream and then they look like puss-ass niggas, so they weren't going to do that. And then they're not going to just go all tough guy because, like, where these guys are killers, I don't think that they are killers.
No.
That all they could do was sit there and try not to look shook. And even, and Migos 1 and 2 to a lesser extent talk about it like you sit there looking all afraid and whatnot. You know,
like, you just killed somebody. Yeah. Like the scene once they're inside, he was like, man, you all nervous.
And Darius is like, well, you're doing a drug deal. It's fine.
Shut up, Darius.
I mean, he seems to be like, fact of the matter, it's another Captain Obvious moment for him, but it is for real. Like,
shut up, Darius.
No one feels comfortable at a drug deal. I mean, they should not feel comfortable at a drug deal. Sorry.
But right after they shoot the guy, we're back with Earn and Van, where he's talking about failing again, says that he doesn't know what he wants, but he wants a chance to find out. Like you said earlier, that's a theme in the first and the second season. Reminds me of Tammy ranting about, you know, she doesn't have time to follow somebody and support them for their dream. You know, she needs to have it together now because we don't get the time to like, oh, I'm just going to go and do a year over here, backpacking while I try to figure out. It's like you're already starting the race behind. So
again, Tammy has a kid, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I had that same note that those conversations are connected.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like you could do that, but you wouldn't be a good parent if you were just trying to take a risk, like with your child's life. It's much more safe to like, let me keep the thing that's paying the bills, and hope that I can devote time, you know, to something. So, and I understood what Earn was saying, like you said, the push and pull, but there were at some points where I was like, it's not like she doesn't care about your dream, but she's got the kid most of the time and somebody's got to feed her. Lottie does not care about your dream. You know, she wants her chicken nuggets and her fruit snacks and she needs to be warm and have a bed to sleep in. So like rent has to be like a regular thing. And Van doesn't have the luxury of just doing that because she's the main parent. And I think that even if they were together and truly living together, she would still be the main parent. Like, it's just that their situation, it exacerbates it and it irritates it because their relationship is not stable. And it's just, it's sad because you can see that they love each other, but there's so much to work through.
Yeah, this is, you know, when kids enter the scene, you know, all of that love is challenged by the responsibility you have to this child, you know, and it can be difficult. So, but is this still the same scene? Because, I mean, there's a couple of points, like there were so many things that happened during that scene in the wood. The fact that Quavo's gun's name was Percy.
Yeah, right before he shot him, he said, bring me Percy.
Yeah, so this running joke with names of guns, that's cute. Before they even get into that conversation about following your dreams, you know, versus, you know, sticking to your responsibilities, the waitress that comes along and just upsells, I wanted to choke her for Earth.
Yeah, I was mad with her too, but that girl is very good at her job. She was good,
but at the same time, I'm like, Earn, you know, and the band definitely wasn't helping. Like you said, she was acting like that rich woman who didn't know her husband lost all the money.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
He's getting my nerves, and I deserve this. But you could also look at it like that girl is hustling too. I mean, she's a server, you know, and I mean, all those servers make good money. I worked in a restaurant for a long time, so I appreciated how she was. Like, she was very good. She didn't treat them like some people treat Black customers when they get sat a Black table and they just assume that they can't pay for things, or they start telling them the price of things. And then even when he did bring up something, which he wasn't joking, but she took it as a joke, but being in customer service, she could have had in her mind, oh, he might be serious, but I'm going to defuse the situation. And she said something like, I forget what it was that they ordered, maybe an appetizer. And she said, you can just share hers. Like, she was personable. She was friendly, but she makes $2.13 an hour. And if she doesn't have a good night, she'll be ordering a kid's meal somewhere too. So, I mean, I thought it's like everybody in this episode is hustling some kind of way, from Al to Darius to Earn to the parking lot guy, to the server, because they do very well, but their pay depends on the flow in the restaurant. So, like, I had to tip my hat to her, but of course, Earn is the protagonist. So you're like, oh my God, stop upselling him. But the whole time I was like, if she worked at Old Navy, her UPT would be awesome.
Yes.
Like, I should have known. I was like, UPT is off the chain. She was good. And I also appreciated how when he said what he said, and I understood it. You know, you work in customer service or some sort of service industry, you have to swallow a lot. And she looked at him and she took like a quick deep breath, because she probably wanted to cuss him out, and was just like, okay. Like, I actually felt for her. That actress was very good. You know, I was mad at her. It's like, all right, stop it. And she's like, does somebody need a brownie sundae? I was like, all right, girl, calm down.
Earn excuses himself from the table to go and check how much this meal is going to cost. And the way the bartender was like, wow, broke as fuck, my nigga.
Yeah. I never thought about doing that. I was like, oh. Going to the bar, like, that never crossed my mind. But then my second thought was, you should not have taken her to this place if you have, like, there's one thing, like, kind of keeping a running tab in your head so that you don't overspend. But if it's like that, just, I mean, he could have just been honest with her. He was taking her out because he knew she was upset and because he wanted to take her out. But you know Van, she knows your situation. I think if you had just expressed to her that you wanted to take her somewhere, you know, hey, get rest and we're going to, you know, leave these four walls, I think she would have understood, because you're so stressed out, you can't enjoy the night. Because what happens is he asked her, it was when the server walked off, like this was in a scene earlier, and he asked her about her day, and she starts to tell him, and he's so stressed out, he cuts her off and excuses himself to go and check the bill. But it's like, you know, you've irritated her further. You know, it's just like, just be honest, because you're spending this money. And it's not a fun night. I mean, Van ate well, but you were stressed out. So you're not like a very good dinner companion.
All he had to do was do his own research, like I said before. Even if Justin said, oh, I take my hoes to Leopold's or whatever the name of the restaurant was, Google it on your phone and just verify. then you could see, oh, I don't see anything about happy hours on the menu on the website, which is right here on my phone, that's easily accessible to me at any given moment of the day.
Yeah. And then the only other thing that irritated me, and this is just a quibble, when they said the owner is from New Orleans, and then they said a seafood soup or a stew. I hate when people do that. It's gumbo. Just say gumbo, even though nobody put no goddamn squid in that gumbo. Call it gumbo. It's not soup. I mean, it is, but we don't call it that. That irritated me. I had to get that out. But a Bayou Breeze sounds like it tastes really good.
It does sound really good. Okay. I'm glad.
I was like, soup. Who calls it soup? Gumbo is not soup. Soup is Campbell's.
Oh, wow. Okay. You feel passionately about this. You have every right to. All of this that happened during the course of the night is pretty much what led to the little argument and then the kind of the attempted detente, you know, at the end of the night. But yeah, when Earn is aggravated, he does get really mean, you know?
Yeah.
And backbiting.
Yeah.
He did not have to say that about Van.
Yeah. Yeah. But I told you, and this is why I think, and we can have this discussion again, the last episode of season one, Juneteenth, there is a scene where we disagreed on his intent. And I told you, Earn is mean. He has a mean side, like where he's complimenting her, but I didn't take it like what he was saying was true, but I didn't feel that his intent behind saying it was to be nice to her. Like, I don't think he was complimenting her. He knew that what he was saying was true, that she does the bulk of the work. It was pretty much the culmination of like of these arguments that we're seeing. But he was saying it like, yes, I know you're better than me, like kind of like that. And you thought that he was being genuine. I think the only genuine thing about it is that what he was saying is true. But he was being mean. He's mild-mannered, but when he does decide to strike, it's always like below the belt. Because that's the same thing he did in season two in Helen, when he said the thing about, you know, him hanging out with Paperboys was paying her bills or something like that. And it's like, why use that against her when, like you just said, it's obvious that he does want to be able to take care. You know, not that he doesn't want her to have a job, but he wants to know that if something does happen with her, that he can take care of her. But then you use it against her at the same time, which is why women are afraid to get comfortable with those kinds of situations, because it always like they always throw it back in your face. So, yeah, I mean, he hits below the belt, you know, and it's like, OK, she wants to own the boutique. Her dream isn't any less than yours, but she has a job right now. She does not have a boutique, but she's got regular money coming in so she can take care of this little girl. And he could get a better job in the meantime, because what he's trying to do takes place like most of the dealings, it's after hours anyway, you know, and I truly believe that Van would be less pissy if he were just bringing more money in, you know, and he is intelligent. You can't tell me that the boy can at least go be like an office temp somewhere. You know, he knows how to code switch. He's obviously intelligent. He could be doing something else. And that is what's annoying to her, you know, and he's painting her like, you know, like, I don't want you to have joy, you know.
I don't even know if she, because she's been cool. Like, again, she bailed this fool out of jail, you know, and I think that if he just communicated, you know, if he was just honest about like, look, I am in dire straits, because I don't think he's being told, you know how men are, like if they don't tell you everything is going on, and, you know, if, especially if you have responsibilities of your own to consider, you're just going to go ahead and make assumptions, especially if they're not being forthcoming. But then that just leads to confusion, aggravation, frustration, discord later on. But I think if he had told her, like, okay, I expect this to come in here, or I'm working with this amount of money right now, you know, so can we do this, or can I have this, or can you do this, you know, just communicate, because she seems like she's going to be reasonable if she's working with all the information.
Yeah, because Van has been very cool, and it's and he really doesn't realize how good he has it, you know, but he talks about it. I mean, all the time, because they were having one of those one of their pillow talk conversations, and he basically was like, you know, hey, I mean, I'm fine being a stereotype. It's working out for me. And it's like, man, she is cool, because I would have throat punched him right then. Like, I've had like a truly irritating day, and you're just like wallowing, even though we're going back and forth and joking. That's dangerous. That's one of those conversations that turns serious really quick. Like, so you're aware, all right, and you're cool, because his life is awesome right now. Like, no, he's not like making that much money, but he has somewhere to lay his head, and it's not a bad place. Like, it's a comfortable little home.
He's comfortable. I mean, he has access to his baby's mom and his baby. Yeah, that's good, but he really can't move. You know, it's one thing when you're choosing to be in that situation. It's another thing when it's a necessity. And I think in that type of instance, all you could do is make fun of it or find a way to laugh about it.
Well, true. Yeah. I'm just saying the time in which he decided to laugh about it was not ideal.
It wasn't ideal. I think that's his coping mechanism, you know? She's been asking him, what do you want? Do you want to pursue this relationship? He doesn't know. And I think he doesn't know because he's not confident that he could be a provider, you know, which hasn't fully, that whole idea hasn't fully realized at this point in the storyline, but that's the debate, you know? Between them. And it's a debate as of the end of this episode that he loses. All right, so he cannot successfully pay for the dinner without Alfred's help. He ends up, like, calling Alfred and risking Alfred's life.
He's like, hello, cousin. How are you today?
Did you get the sense that when they cut back to the restaurant and then they cut back to the RV, Migos One is saying, sorry about all those guns. So I get the sense, like, while we were at the restaurant, some really intense stuff happened that involved a lot of guns that they again stowed away and then they carried on with the drug deal.
I think that Migos has multiple revenue streams. I think they've got different things going on. But also, when they cut back to that scene and he apologized, he said, if I heard him right, I've heard some crazy shit about you.
Yeah, because he, again, just two episodes ago, and this might even been a few days ago or within the same week, he shot somebody.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
They heard what they heard, and he heard what he heard, and then Darius probably heard something totally different.
Jesus is made of green gummy bears. What? But, like, what do you make of, I mean, I get why he was questioning him about how quickly he got out of jail, but was he trying to say something in particular? Because he was like, you shot somebody, right? And then you got out that fast. It's like, wait, like, do you not believe him? Or, like, I was trying to get, why he would be curious. I mean, it's obviously, it's a big story. You know, we got that sense on the last episode, but I didn't understand, like, what he was trying to get at. Like, did he think that somebody had gotten him off? Or, like, why was he suspicious?
As I said before, this fool might be DMX. And I firmly believe that DMX is an undercover CIA agent.
I thought that at one time, because it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's just too insane. And so I think he was suggesting, like, are you a narc? Are you an undercover narc? You know, posing as a rap star. Because you got, like, if all the things that I heard in the street is true, you kill somebody, like, outright, point blank, witnesses around, you shot, and then the next day you're right out of jail. So you got pulled like that. What's really going on?
But I thought from the first episode that they did not find the victim.
No, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't find the victim. But again, you know how gossip works. It's not.
Yeah. It's just a game of telephone. They're like, yeah, he killed five people. Yeah. Okay.
So there's no telling what they heard, you know, but they see he's out and free running the streets, making drug deals out in the woods. Witnessing people get killed. Like, he just witnessed somebody get killed. Like,
true. I guess if I killed somebody in front of you and then was like, hold on, are you a cop? Yeah.
The enormity of that. They go home and carry on, you know, like regular. After watching somebody get gunned down in the woods with a gun named Percy.
That's a good gun name.
I feel like it is.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So yeah, let's see this.
Alfred saved the day again. Sorry. Alfred yet again saves the day.
Yeah.
By putting $20 in Ern's account. And then Ern still has to, like, go above and beyond that and declare the card stolen because of the tip that Van added because she thought that Ern was being sexist.
Yes. Yeah, she was, the push and pull of this episode was great, because I'd be like, yay, Van. Oh, come on, Van, stop it. Because it's like, man, you have no idea, like, what he's going through. Again, all he had to do was just level with her, and I can't see Van being like, if you can't take me to this place and get this, and we know she's not like that. I mean, he could have enjoyed himself much more. Van just gone to a movie, because the amount of money he had, he could have gone, like, they could have gone to a place that's not as upscale, but still nice. Cause it's about, you know, like, let's spend time with each other and not argue about things. So he bought that on himself, but, like, she was just being so pissy. And she's like, what? Have some class. But I was like, damn, come on, Van. Yeah, but you can see her, like, she's dealing with her own issues. And she's like, oh, she doesn't even make money. You can have a dick. And I'm like, actually, none of the people that are male or female, like, they all make a lousy $2. And I think they upped it to 26 cents now. It used to be $2.13.
Yeah. At this point, the fake parking lot attendant might be doing better than all of them.
Yes. Okay. What was your That's So Atlanta moment? I think we probably have the same thing.
There was a lot of That's So Atlanta. Okay. So I mentioned Zesto. That's an Atlanta staple. The fake parking attendant, that's very, very Atlanta. the woods where nobody can hear you scream. We know from season two that's so Atlanta, but it was this. Yep. It was very Atlanta in this episode. The Sherlyn encore. That's...
No.
That is ridiculously so Atlanta. And according to you, it's just a total black thing.
I think it's just black. Yeah. Because my that's so Atlanta moment was the fake parking attendant. Because that's New Orleans, too. You know, all of the events that we host, you see so many hooked up things where it's like, okay, y'all, sure y'all got me. I got you, baby. I got you. You hear me? Look, park right here. Look, we're going to be here the whole time. We got a porta potty. We bought some crawfish over there. Y'all come out. Y'all fix plate. We got your car. It's just like, it's always like, not only is this a place to park your car, I'm probably going to cut your hair and make you a plate too. All for $20. And maybe cash your paycheck for you. So again, Atlanta is another word for black. So there's lots of crossovers. Dariusisms, I had a few. We kind of touched on them. Handcuffing the briefcase to his hand. That's a dumb sentence, but you know. And then not having the key. You already said the thing about selling drugs, but when he said your fear of daddy, or your dislike of the word daddy, is it has a lot to do with your fear of mortality, which again, Darius is always talking about not being afraid to die, like, you know, or death. Like there's always some kind of reference. Did you have any other ones?
Well, it's a drug deal. It's vibes. Yeah, that. Again, way to state the obvious. But yeah, was he the one that said, what did he say as they were walking away? And I think Alfred said, yeah, that dude is definitely going to die tonight.
I don't think Darius said anything. I think Al just said that, right?
Okay, yeah. So yeah, we pretty much had all the same Dariusisms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, that was basically just a visual joke. Like, okay, there's only three Migos, and that guy is like obviously not on the same wavelength. He showed up late. He's like, hey, paper boy, you know, and he's like, we're the four Migos. It's like, yeah, they're gonna kill him too. And that's his cousin.
They already mentioned that he talks a lot. He talks too much. So. He's not
going to
survive.
They're going to kill him.
So that's what happened to the fourth member of Migos, yo.
Yeah. I thought that was really, really cute. It had more of an impact on me, like much later when I was like, oh, that's Migos. Because first watching that, I didn't really know that. Like that's how much I didn't even know what Migos looked like. I knew there was something called the Migos in their music, but it didn't make any sense to me until later. And then when Donald Glover, when he won the award and he said, I just like to thank Migos for making Bad and Bougie. That's when that song was even on my radar, really. You know, like that is a mutually beneficial relationship there, Glover and Migos. I didn't have any mystical elements. Did you?
I didn't have one either. I guess I was just curious as to what that guy did to deserve to get shot in the woods like that, in the back.
Yeah.
But besides that, there wasn't anything too magical that happened in this episode, unless I just totally glossed over it.
No, I mean, because I watched the episode again just because of that, because that was the only thing that I didn't have. And there are so many like little moments that you can forget about with the show because it's so packed. But unless you count like, you know, what's going to happen to the fourth member. My SGR moment was the guy getting shot. The back in the woods.
But I'll do you one on top of that. When they pulled him out of that compartment in the RV, the way Alfred and Darius jumped, that was real fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was total surprise. So shit got really real for them in that moment. Because I think even while they were spending the whole episode preparing for this drug meet, I think it was romanticized in their head, especially in Darius's head. Oh, another Dariusism. When he drops the bullet in the cereal box as he's playing with the gun.
Oh, I wrote that one down and just didn't read it. Yeah. Yeah, when he said, yeah, there might be a bullet in here. So stupid.
Yeah, again, like, it seems like this whole drug dealing thing is just a game. Like, does he really understand what's at stake while he's sitting there ironing money and playing with guns with cereal?
But that's my question with Darius for everything. Like, he doesn't seem to take things seriously at all. But then on the other hand, he understands the seriousness of everything. But he's just he's nonchalant, like, about everything, you know? And then he'll turn around and say something really, really deep, and it shows that he does think about things thoroughly and deeply, and, you know, he's very intelligent, you know, just to think about some of the things that we talked about with him in the second season, like biohacking and just knowing different things. So he's not an idiot, but it does seem like his attitude with life is just like, okay, like, let's see what happens today. He doesn't seem to attach too much of himself to anything. It's like, yeah, this happened. Yeah, you know, I assist my friend in dealing drugs, but then I also do this. And, you know, he doesn't really seem to think that hard about anything. But when you have the attitude that he does, which is well documented, that it irritates me with destiny is destiny, I guess you could have that attitude. Like, nothing is real. Like, whatever's going to happen was going to happen anyway. So why stress over anything?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I know. We'll see.
Well, that concludes the third episode of season one of Atlanta. Thank you for listening. Rappin' Atlanta is recorded and produced by Nikki Ebo and Nita Charisse. Our theme music is Joy Clark's Galaxy Group, performed by Joy Clark. You can follow this talented artist on Instagram at Joy Clark Music. Our show's artwork is created by Loso Perez, creative director at Prime Vice Studios. You can follow Prime Vice on Instagram at Prime_Vice. You can find us on your favorite podcast player. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe. You can follow Rappin' Atlanta on Instagram and Twitter at Rappin' Atlanta.